This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents Daylight, written by David Baldacci, read by Brittany Presley and Keith Brewer. To Ron Cooney Hero, who has the heart of a lion and is loved and respected by all who know him. Chapter 1. Now is the moment of reckoning. FBI Special Agent Atlee Pine was sitting in her rental car outside of Andersonville, Georgia, with her assistant, Carol Blum, next to her. She hit the name on her contact list and listened to the phone ringing.
Pine, how nice of you to call,
the dripping with sarcasm voice said into her ear. The man speaking was the FBI's top dog in Arizona, Clint Dobbs. He was the one who had given Pine permission to take a sabbatical in order to find out what had happened to her twin sister Mercy, who had been abducted from their home in Andersonville 30 years before. 6-year-old Pine had nearly died in the process. Sorry, sir. It's just been a little busy.
I understand that you have been extremely busy. You solved a series of murders down there, prevented other killings, nearly got blown up in the process, and discovered something truly remarkable about your past. Hell, the Bureau might owe you a bonus.
I take it you've been kept informed through other channels.
You could say that, yes, since you have been remarkably uncommunicative.
Would that source of info be Eddie Laredo? Laredo was an FBI special agent who had been sent down to Georgia to help in a murder investigation. He and Pine had a history, a complicated one, but she believed they had resolved things.
I have multiple sources keeping me informed. What did you find out about your sister's disappearance?
When my mother was a teenager, she was a mole in a sting operation involving the mob back in the 80s. One of the guys that went down as a result was a man named Bruno Vincenzo, who was murdered after he went to prison. Bruno had a brother in Jersey named Ito. Apparently, Ito found out what happened and blamed my mother for his brother's death. Somehow he discovered where we were, came down to Georgia, and kidnapped my sister.
Do you have a line on this Ito Vincenzo? Is he even still alive?
I checked the state's official online database. There's no record of his death, but he might not have died in New Jersey. I found out that he lived in Trenton. I've got the house address. It's in the name of a Teddy Vincenzo. That's his son.
Sounds like he might have inherited it. So maybe his old man did die. Maybe he was a snowbird and breathed his last in Florida. If so, he might be beyond your reach, Pine.
I can still talk to his family. They might know something helpful.
Okay, if they'll talk to you. And where is this Teddy Vincenzo?
Pine let out a long sigh. In prison at Fort Dix.
Ah, well, crime indeed runs in the family. At least he's in Jersey. So you want to go to Trenton now? Is that why you finally called me?
There was an edge to Dobbs' voice that Pine did not care for. I don't see any other way.
Oh, you don't, do you? Maybe you and I have a different idea about that, Pine.
I just need a little more time. I got sidetracked by the murders down here. But for that, I could have made a lot more progress.
So what you're saying is that while you've been on leave, you've actually still been working as an agent.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I agree with you, Pine,
said Dobbs, surprising her.
You did great work down there, as I already pointed out. If it were up to me, I'd tell you to take as much time as you need. But while I'm the top agent in Arizona, I do have people above me, Pine. A lot of them. And there have been grumblings about the Bureau.
I didn't think I was that important, said Pine sharply. And who's complaining?
Let me point it out, then. I've got two agents on rotation, covering for you in Shattered Rock, even though they've got their own assignments. They're not happy about that because they've got no backup, which you apparently enjoy, but they don't. And I've also had to redirect admin resources there because Carol's with you. And while I know this is the 21st century, the fact that you are, well, you know.
You mean the fact that I'm a woman, that the guys don't think I'm carrying my weight?
They think you're getting special treatment. And, in fact, you are. I've had more than a few complaining that they've all got problems, but they still have to get up and go to work every day. So what's the deal with you?
Pine barked. You were the one to tell me to work out this issue if I wanted to keep working at the Bureau. And the only way I can do that is to find my damn sister. Blum put a calming hand on Pine's arm. Dobbs said,
I will take into account your natural anger, but just keep in mind who the hell you're talking to, Pine.
Pine took a long breath. I just need a little more time, sir. A few more days. Dobbs didn't say anything for so long that Pine was afraid the man had hung up.
Trenton, New Jersey, huh?
Yes, said Pine quietly.
Funny thing, Pine. I started out in Trenton more years ago than I can remember. It was going through some challenging times back then. It's going through more challenging times right now.
He paused.
Okay, a few more days. If you need any backup or info, dial up the guys there and tell them Clint Dobbs said it's okay. They won't believe you, but they'll believe it when I tell them it's true.
Pine glanced at Blum with wide eyes. I was not expecting that.
I wasn't expecting to say it, Pine. The offer just popped into my head. But I need to make this point as clear as I can. You have to finish this and come home. You got that? The Bureau pays your salary to work for them. I know I told you to go after this to get your head straight, but at the end of the day, that's your problem, not mine. And you're not the only agent I have to deal with, okay? I got hundreds of them, and they all got problems. You got that?
Yes, sir. Got it. And I'm so grateful. Thank you for... But Dobbs had already clicked off. Pine slowly put the phone down. New Jersey, here we come. Chapter 2. 2 days later, Pine was driving in her rental car through a working-class neighborhood on the outskirts of Trenton. She was thinking about what she would say to Anthony, Tony Vincenzo, who sometimes stayed at the home his father, Teddy, had apparently inherited from his father, Ito Vincenzo. She didn't want to deal with the inevitable red tape of visiting Teddy Vincenzo in prison if she didn't have to. Tony was low-hanging fruit. But with her current frame of mind, if Tony chose not to help her, she might just shoot him. As the grandson of Ito Vincenzo, Tony could possibly tell her something about Ito. Hopefully where he currently was, if he was still alive. And that might lead to mercy, which was why she was here after all. The road to mercy had been long and tortuous, and some days the destination seemed as unreachable as the summit of Mount Everest. But now that Pine finally had a breakthrough in the case, she was going for it. And if it took her longer than a few days, so be it. Pine had been compelled to hunt for her sister after a disastrous encounter with a pedophile who had kidnapped a little girl in Colorado. Her rage, fueled by the memory of her own sister's abduction, had resulted in Pine's almost beating the man to death and breaking every rule the Bureau had. Clint Dobbs had given her an ultimatum: resolve her personal issues about her sister, or find another line of work. But now she didn't need any motivation from Dobbs, or anyone else. Now she would willingly chuck her FBI career in exchange for finding her sister. It's not just my job that I won't be able to do if I don't find out what happened to my sister. It's my life that I won't be able to do. Being able to admit this to herself had been both frightening and liberating. With a Glock as her main weapon, and a Beretta Nano stuck in an ankle holster in case everything else went to hell, which it often did in her line of work, Pine pulled to a stop 3 cookie-cutter houses down from Vincenzo's humble abode. All the homes here were salt boxes with asphalt shingles, about 1,200 square feet set over a story and a half of unremarkable architecture. The area was all post-World War II housing, constituting a grid of homes that had surrounded virtually every city across the country within a decade after the boys had come home from fighting Hitler, Mussolini, and Hirohito. 9 or so months thereafter, baby boomers by the millions were born in neighborhoods just like this. Those boomers were now taking their rightful place as grandparents to the millennials and the Z generations. What was left was an old, tired group of dwellings, inhabited both by the elderly and also those just starting out. Though they looked alike, the properties did differ. Some yards were neat and organized. Siding and trim were freshly painted. Mailboxes rested on stout metal posts, and washed cars were parked in driveways that had been kept up. Other homes had none of these attributes. The cars in the driveways or parked in the yards were more often resting on cinder blocks than on tires. The sounds of air-powered tools popping and generators rumbling foretold that some of these places had businesses operating out of them, either legal or not. Siding peeled away from these structures, and front doors were missing panes of glass. Mailboxes were leaning or entirely gone. Driveways were more weeds than concrete or gravel. She counted 3 dwellings with bullet holes in the facade, and one that still had police crime scene tape swirling in the tricky wind. Tony Vincenzo's place fell into the houses that hadn't been kept up category. But she didn't care what his home looked like. She only wanted everything he held in his memory or in hard evidence about his grandfather Ito and any others who might have played a role in her childhood nightmare. She eased out of her car and stared at the front of the house. Ito Vincenzo had once owned this place and had raised his family here with his wife. Pine had no idea what sort of a father and husband he was. But if he had it in him to nearly kill one little girl and kidnap another, she would rate his parental skills suspect at the very least. Tony Vincenzo worked at Fort Dix, the nearby army installation. The prison where his father was behind bars was part of that complex. Maybe the son wanted to be close to the father. If so, maybe Tony visited Teddy regularly, and thus might have information to share about Ito that he'd learned from his old man. Pine headed up the sidewalk where the concrete had lurched upward, corrupted by decades of freezing and thawing and no maintenance. She imagined Ito Vincenzo, her sister's abductor, and the man who almost killed her, walking this very same path decades before. The thought left her nearly breathless. She stopped, composed herself, and kept going. Pine reached the front door and peered in one side of the glass panels. She could see no activity going on in there. If the guy had followed in his daddy's footsteps, the criminal element would not be out in the open. They usually did their dirty deeds in the basement and away from prying eyes. Yet the guy was gainfully employed at Fort Dix, so maybe he was completely law-abiding. She knocked and got no answer. She knocked again as a courtesy and got the same result. She looked to her left at the house next door, where an old woman was rocking in a chair on her front porch, some needlework in hand. It was sunny, though cool, and she had on a bright orange shawl. Her gray hair looked freshly permed, with patches of shiny pink scalp peeking through here and there, like sunlight through clouds. She took no note of Pine. Her bespectacled eyes were focused on stitch 1, purl 2. Her yard was neatly kept, and colorful flower pots with winter mums in them were arrayed around the porch, adding needed color to what was otherwise drab and cold. "Tony's in there," the woman said quietly. Pine walked over to the far end of Vincenzo's front porch and put her hand on the wooden railing. "You know him?" The woman, keeping her eyes on her needlework, nodded imperceptibly. "But I don't know you."
"Name's Atlee."
"Funny name for a girl."
"Yeah, I've heard that."
"So he's here?"
"Saw him go in an hour ago and he hasn't come out."
"Just him?"
"That I don't know, but I haven't seen anyone else."
The whole time the woman spoke quietly and kept her eyes on the knitting. Anyone not standing as close as Pine would not even be able to tell she was speaking to her.
"Okay, thanks for the heads up."
"You here to arrest him? You a cop?"
"No, and yes, I am," said Pine.
"Then why are you knocking on his door?"
"Just want to ask him some questions."
"He works at Fort Dix."
Yeah, I've heard.
He probably won't like your questions.
Probably not. Does he live here full time? I couldn't find that out.
He's in and out. He's not nice to me. He calls me bad names and he pisses on my flowers. And I don't like the look of his friends. This used to be a nice neighborhood, but not anymore. Now I just want to make it out alive.
Well, thanks.
Don't thank me. Boy's bad news. You watch yourself.
I will. Pine walked back over to the front door and knocked again. Anthony Vincenzo? She called out. Nothing. For 1, 2, 3 seconds. Then something. A lot of something. A noise exploded from the back of the house. Pine had heard that sound many times. A back door being kicked open. Then another familiar noise. Feet running away. People were always running away from her, and with good reason. And with equally good reason, she wasn't going to let that happen. She leapt over the porch railing as the woman looked up from her yarn and needles. "Go get the little prick," she said, a smile creasing her heavily wrinkled face. Pine's boots hit the pavement. She was at full speed in 5 strides. Inhale through the nose, out through the mouth. Motor the arms and the legs will follow. A blur of blue shirt and lighter jeans and clunky white sneakers was up ahead and pulling away. She redoubled her speed but wasn't making up any ground. Tony Vincenzo was over a decade younger and undoubtedly faster, even with Pine's longer legs. And he had the added fuel of fear. Fear could make the slow fast and the weak strong. And turn a coward into the bravest of the brave, if only because there's no way out. Tony, I just want to talk to you, that's all, she shouted as she sucked in one quick breath after another. Vincenzo merely increased his speed. Asshole was an Olympian now. She'd need a car to catch him. Shit. Pine looked around, eyeing any way she could take a shortcut and catch up to him. She briefly contemplated pulling her weapon and firing a warning shot just to scare the shit out of him, maybe making him run crazy, hit something, and fall over. That would be all she'd need. She saw it at the last possible second. Movement to her right. Then she was blindsided. She tumbled heels over ass, kept rolling on purpose, and popped to her feet in a controlled squat, her Glock out and pointed at the man who'd nailed her. Only thing was his weapon was out and pointed at her.
FBI!
She barked, mad with fury. Drop the gun! Do it!
Army CID!
The man barked right back.
Put your weapon down! Now!
The two were frozen, staring at each other for the longest time. The man was over 6'3", ramrod straight, about 200 extremely fit pounds, and also instantly familiar to Pine. She blinked rapidly, as though hoping it would not turn out to be who she thought it was. It didn't work. She lowered her weapon.
Puller?
John Puller holstered his regulation M11 pistol. He looked equally stunned and was shaking his head.
Pine?
Tony Vincenzo was long gone.
What the hell are you doing here? She asked.
He looked past her in the direction of where Vincenzo was headed.
I was here to make an arrest.
She blanched and looked over her shoulder as the truth hit her.
Crap! Tony Vincenzo?
He nodded, frowning.
Long in the works, Atlee. And you, unfortunately, walked right into the middle of it.
Chapter 3. The coffee shop, the sign outside said, had been in business since 1954. It held cracked red vinyl seats, pasty linoleum flooring, and scarred wooden-backed booths. The kitchen, glimpsed through the pass window, had pots and pans and grease that looked about as old as the restaurant. What it lacked in ambience and cleanliness, it didn't really make up for with anything else. But maybe that was the point of a beloved local hangout. A few elderly customers were dawdling over their meals and looking at their smartphones. Pine and Puller sat facing each other in one of the booths, both cradling cups of coffee. Next to Puller was a man in his early 30s, and who had been introduced to her as CID Special Agent Ed McElroy. He was working on Puller's team in the Vincenzo case and had been there to help take the man into custody.
So you two go way back, I guess,
said McElroy. Puller nodded and glanced at Pine.
You want to tell him?
Pine took a sip of her coffee. Puller wasn't a chief warrant officer yet, and I'd only been with the Bureau about 4 years. I was still on the East Coast back then. I'm assigned out near the Grand Canyon now. Anyway, I was appointed to serve on a joint task force with the Army. A businessman the Bureau was investigating for bribing public officials managed to get his hooks into a couple of senior Army officers. Puller took up the story when Pine paused and glanced at him. He said,
The former generals were court-martialed and spent some time reflecting on their sins in the custody of the military branch they once served.
He paused and shot Pine a look.
It got dicey a couple of times. How so?
Asked McElroy. Pine said, Well, turns out the businessman had ties to a group of mercenaries from overseas. Really bad dudes with no problem killing anybody they were paid to. How many times did they try to kill us, Puller?
3, 4 if you count the car bomb that we found before it went off. Damn,
said McElroy.
And what happened to this businessman?
Puller said,
He's having a wonderful time in a federal lockup and will be for pretty much the rest of his life.
Pine glanced at Puller. I'm really sorry for blowing your bust.
You had no way of knowing. Just bad luck all around.
So, you were chasing Vincenzo for crimes committed at Fort Dix?
Among other things,
replied Puller, setting his coffee cup down.
Ed and I have been on this sucker for about a month, and Tony Vincenzo is right in the middle of it.
How long have you been in the Army? She asked McElroy.
Going on 15 years, the last 5 with CID. Been working with Chief Puller for about 9 months now.
You have a family?
Back in Detroit. Wife and 2 kids. She's used to deployments, but they were hard. This job is a little more flexible.
Pine turned to Puller. So you were about to bring the hammer down on Tony. How come?
He's part of a drug ring operating out of Fort Dix. He works in the motor pool. A good mechanic by all accounts, but apparently his pay wasn't enough to support his lifestyle. He got hooked up with some really bad guys on the outside.
He's not military then?
No, but he was committing crimes on a military installation, which is why I'm involved. Dix is technically under the jurisdiction of the Air Force Air Mobility Command. Base operations are performed by the 87th Air Base Wing, and it provides management as well.
But if the Air Force oversees it, where do you come in? Asked Pine.
It's a joint base installation, so there are Army and Navy elements there as well. Each branch retains complete control of their commands there. Vincenzo was employed by the Army, so the problem fell to me. He also recruited some stupid Army grunts as part of his plot, so that falls to me too. The Air Force is in the background only. Army carries the load on this one.
Boy, and I thought the Bureau structure was unwieldy.
The Army out-complicates everybody,
noted Puller matter-of-factly.
And is very proud of that.
Was he selling into the military then, from these outside sources? Puller nodded.
We believe so, at least. And the readiness of our military isn't helped by soldiers who happen to be druggies, or who can be blackmailed by enemies of this country into doing stuff they should never do.
I can see that.
And why did you want to see Vincenzo? You working a case involving him? We might want to team up then.
No. She glanced at McElroy for a moment. It's personal, John. It has to do with my sister.
Vincenzo did something to your sister?
Said Puller. No, this goes way back to his grandfather. It was a long story, but Pine managed it in a string of succinct sentences chock full of information, including what she had recently discovered in Georgia about Ito Vincenzo having taken her sister. She didn't want to burden Puller with her problems, but she had great respect for him as both a person and an investigator. And it just felt good to get it off her chest.
Damn,
said Puller when she'd finished.
Roger that,
said McElroy.
Really sorry that all happened to your family, ma'am. That's just awful. Nobody should have to go through that.
Thanks, Puller said.
Well, Tony Vincenzo's old man is a bad egg, too. He's in federal prison at Fort Dix.
Yeah, I knew that. But all I wanted to ask Tony was where his grandfather Ito was, if he's even still alive. Since the house is in Teddy's name, he may not be.
New Jersey has an online database for death records,
said Puller. I checked there. Nothing. But he might have died in another state, and not all of them have online databases you can search.
I see your dilemma. But surely Tony or Teddy will know if he's alive or not.
That's what I'm hoping.
Sounds like your mother had quite the unique experience working undercover like that and bringing down the mob. And you have no idea where she is now?
Pine shook her head. If she's still alive, she's beyond even the Bureau's ability to find her. Because I've tried. She glanced at Puller. Look, I blew your collar. What can I do to make this good?
I'm not sure. We were going to make the arrest because we needed to lean on Vincenzo to get him to rat further up the chain. He's small fry. CID wants the big boys, and none of the grunts we busted are really privy to their identities. I was deploying a team around the property when you walked into the circle. Ed was heading up the rear flank, but they weren't in position yet. That's how he was able to escape out the back.
Can I bring any Bureau assets to bear on this? He shook his head.
Thanks for the offer, but we're well stocked with manpower and resources. And we'll find him. He doesn't have many places to hide.
Will you let me know when you do?
I'll definitely do what I can.
I appreciate whatever you can do.
We better get going. Got paperwork to file on this.
Puller rose, and so did McElroy. A lot more paperwork because of me, said Pine.
If I had a buck for every wrong move I made, intentionally or not, so kick it out of your head. Just one of those things.
After they left, Pine stared down at her unfinished meal and muttered, shit. Chapter 4. You had no way of knowing, said Carol Blum. Pine had returned to her room at the hotel, where she was staying with her assistant, Carol Blum, who was in her 60s and had been an admin at the Bureau for nearly 4 decades. A mother of 6 grown children, Blum was rarely surprised or intimidated. She was traveling with Pine to help her on this case. Normally, Pine and Blum worked out of a single-agent office in Shattered Rock, Arizona. Known in Bureau parlance as an RA or resident agency, as opposed to the far larger FBI field offices that were located in metro areas. I know, but I still feel bad. Puller is a good guy. Knowing him, he'd plan this down to the last detail. Only he had no way of realizing I'd walk right into the middle of it and blow the whole thing. But Tony Vincenzo was there. He definitely was the one running away. Yes. John thinks he can track Vincenzo down pretty quickly, but I'm not so sure. Is there any other way to get to Ito's whereabouts, other than his grandson? Tony was plan A, but plan B is I can talk to Ito's son, Teddy. He's in the prison at Fort Dix right here in Trenton. Is Fort Dix a military prison? No, it's just on the military's installation land. It's run by the Federal Bureau of Prisons. Minimum to medium security. Though they've got some crime bosses doing time there, along with politicians and businessmen gone bad. Okay. By the way, have you heard from Jack Lineberry? He was supposed to leave the hospital yesterday. He can afford the best home care around. Yes, I'm sure. But I was talking about... I know, Carol, Pine said sharply. In a calmer tone, she added, I haven't come to grips with it, if you want to know the truth. I thought he might be able to help me find my mother. Right now, he needs to concentrate on healing. Understood. But I will check in and keep him in the loop. And he might have some information for me that could help. Pine pulled out her phone. I was going to try to schedule a meeting with Teddy Vincenzo, but an idea just occurred to me. What? I'm going to have Puller make the request to the prison. He may very well want to talk to Teddy Vincenzo, too, about Tony. Teddy might have some clue about where his son has gone to ground. And while it's a federal prison, it is located on a military installation, so Puller can help cut through the red tape. We can get in faster that way. Sounds like a plan, said Blum.
Pine made the call and Puller answered on the second ring. She told him what she wanted, and he said he would make it happen, with one condition.
I want to go with you when you talk to Teddy.
I was going to insist that you do, said Pine.
I'll try for 0900 tomorrow, okay?
Works for me. I'll meet you there.
See you then.
Pine clicked off and looked at Blum. Blum said, Well, this might be a silver lining. I imagine Teddy might know more about his father than Tony would about his grandfather. I was thinking the same thing. Now the only question is, will he talk? With prisoners, it's always about the quid pro quo. I know, Carol, but we'll come up with something to dangle in front of him. So what now? We wait until you meet with him? No, I have another plan. What's that? After Tony got away, we searched for other people in the house, but I didn't really search the house. I think I need to correct that oversight. Do you have a warrant? No, but Puller did. I can piggyback off that. He won't have a problem with that? Asked Blum, looking skeptical. I don't see why he would. We're on the same side. Well, he's looking to nail Vincenzo for a crime and use him to get a bigger fish. You're looking to find out about Ito and solve what happened to your sister. And you think they're mutually exclusive? Not necessarily, but I'm not sure they're wholly compatible either. Well, I'm willing to risk it. That's what I thought you'd say. And you disapprove? If I did, I would have said so. But just keep what I said in mind, that's all. I keep everything you say in mind, Carol. Chapter 5.
You didn't get him, did you?
Pine looked over at the front porch of the house next to the Vincenzo's, where the old woman was still in the rocking chair, though her yarn and needles were nowhere in sight. It had grown chillier, and she had on a heavier coat. Pine saw the orange glow of a rusted stand-up outdoor heater next to her. No, I didn't.
He's fast, but I thought you might have a shot. You've got long legs.
Not long enough, apparently. Hopefully, I'll get another chance. You stay outside all day? It's pretty raw.
There's nothing in the house to keep me occupied. I like to know what's going on around me. People passing by, punks running from the cops. Speaking of which, they're inside the house.
Military cops. Yeah, I know. I saw their cars parked out front. You have any idea where Tony might have gone?
They already asked me. I'll tell you what I told them. No. I don't make conversation with that man if I can help it. I know what he is, and he knows I know. Anybody pisses on flowers, well.
Okay. Anything else you can tell me that might be helpful?
I have to live here, you know.
I know, Ms. The woman shook her head.
Sure, you can find out if you want to, but...
I'm going to leave my card in your mailbox. You think of anything and you want to tell me confidentially? The woman looked away, made the sign of the cross, mumbled what sounded like a prayer, pulled out a book from her coat and started to read it in the fading light. Pine saw that it was a small Bible. Pine watched her for a few more seconds and then knocked on the front door. Her creds and mentioning John Puller's name got her inside, where she spoke with a CID agent named Bill Crocker, a buzz-cut young man with a trim, runner's build, and a serious expression. She explained her interest, and he said,
We've looked where we needed to look and bagged what we needed to bag. Chief Puller wants us to stay here until he says otherwise, and he told us about you. So look around. But if you find something we missed...
You'll be the first to know, I promise.
Yes, ma'am.
She started on the top floor and worked her way down. The place was a mess. There was a hole in one wall of a bedroom that allowed one to see outside. The faucets were all rusted, the sinks stained, and the carpet and padding was so threadbare, she could see the subfloor in numerous places. Tony's bed was a sleeping bag laid out in one room. His clothes were not hung in the closet. They were rolled into a massive ball on the floor. Empty fast food containers littered the floor. A flat-screen TV hung on one wall. An Xbox controller lay under it. Well, At least he has his priorities right. The kitchen had far more ants and roaches than pots and dishes, and the few that were in the sink had food crusted on them so deeply that she wasn't sure in which year they had been placed there. It was so filthy here. The very air seemed permeated with grime, germs, and a burgeoning plague. She finally arrived in the basement. The dust patterns in the floor told her that CID had taken several large items from down here. The walls were paneled in cheap plywood, and someone had attempted to paint them the ugliest brown she had ever seen. The carpet was ripped and ratty and pulled up in several places to reveal the concrete slab just below. The air was musty enough down here to make Pine's nose wrinkle and lungs twitch. She leaned against a wall and peered around the space. She would bet that the white residue on the carpet was coke dust or shavings from a pill mill machine. And the dust patterns were probably the outline of the base of said pill machine. Vincenzo obviously did his criminal manufacturing work down here where prying eyes could not reach. Normally, she would be interested in that, but nothing about her current situation qualified as normal. Yet what she might be interested in was possibly staring her right in the face. The wall of old framed pictures. They were all hanging off kilter, and Vincenzo had apparently never bothered to set them right. She doubted he ever looked at them while he was down here doing his drug alchemy. It was probably just his family, after all. She strode over there and flicked on the overhead light right above this section of the space. The fluorescent tubes popped, flickered, and then came to life, turning murky to milky. She started from the top left with an eye to working her way to the bottom right. Halfway through, Pine stopped and stared at the image of a younger Ido Vincenzo, the man she believed had taken her sister Mercy. And then he had tried to blame all of that on her poor father. She thought his features, surprisingly enough, were kind. She knew him to be anything but, at least when it had come to herself and Mercy. Her gaze continued to travel along the rows of pictures. She spent a little time with Bruno Vincenzo, Ido's mobster older brother, whom she recognized from another photo of the man she had seen in a newspaper. He had been coming out of a federal courthouse and trying to shield his face with a paperback book. Pine believed that Bruno was the reason Ido had done what he had. It was retribution against her mother for having helped send Bruno to prison, where he had ended up getting a shiv in his carotid for turning snitch on his fellow mobsters. Next to Ido's picture was the framed image of a woman. The photo was old. She could tell by the clothes, hairstyle, and picture quality. It looked like one of those instant Polaroids. The woman looked to be about the same age as Ido. Was it his wife? Tony Vincenzo's grandmother? Possibly another source of information, if Pine could only find her. And maybe I might have someone to ask about that who is very close by. And why the hell didn't I think of it before? Come on, Pine, start bringing your A game. She hustled upstairs and out the front door and over to the edge of the front porch, where the old woman still sat in her rocker, still reading her Bible. How long have you lived here? Asked Pine.
My husband and I bought this place a year after we were married. Got a good deal. We raised our kids here.
So, a long time then?
Over 50 years.
So you knew Ido Vincenzo? He lived here back then with his family?
Yes, I knew him.
What can you tell me about him?
What do you want to know?
Anything.
Why?
Pine walked over to the woman's porch and perched on the rail in front of her. She wanted to be on the lady's home turf when she said what she was about to say. It might make all the difference.
I think he might have abducted my twin sister 30 years ago and nearly killed me.
For the first time, Pine thought she had the woman's full attention.
And Ido came back the next morning and got into a fight with my father, trying to blame him for what had happened, for a crime he had committed.
The woman sized her up.
30 years ago? You must have been just a child.
I was 6.
Why would Ido have done that? That wouldn't be like him at all. He was a good, God-fearing man.
Maybe something else came along that he was even more afraid of? He had a brother, Bruno Vincenzo.
The woman visibly shuddered.
So you knew Bruno, too,
I take it. Night and day, those two. Ito was nothing like Bruno. We all knew what Bruno was. You mean the mob? I mean a lot of things, and all of them bad. It got so that Evie wouldn't allow him to come over.
Evie is Ito's wife?
Yes.
And Ito was okay with that?
To tell the truth, Ito couldn't stand his brother.
That's interesting and informative.
So I can't believe Ito would have done something like that. He was a nice guy, raised his kids right, helped me and my husband out when we needed it, fixed our furnace, helped re-roof our house. Folks did back then. Now, nobody knows nobody.
Teddy's in prison, and we both know about Tony. So how good could Ito have really been as a father?
She looked at the woman questioningly. Well, Ito had a business. He worked long hours, and Teddy took after Bruno, I think. Always a bad one. Nothing you can do about that when it's in the blood. Always in trouble, looking for the quick buck.
What happened to Teddy's wife? I assume he was married?
Yes. She left him about 10 years ago. She'd had enough. I would have never lasted that long. They used to live here. Fights all the time. The thugs Teddy had over, and they were thugs. They threatened us. Would have gotten bad, but I do have to say that Teddy wouldn't let them hurt us. Maybe because we were friends with his parents. Only kind thing I ever knew him to do. So Tony grew up around all that. No wonder he turned out the way he did.
Do you know where Teddy's ex is? Asked Pine.
Jane? No, I haven't heard from her in years. I hope she found happiness somewhere. That woman deserved it if anybody ever did.
And Ito Vincenzo's wife, Evie? Said Pine. I assume you knew her well.
Yes, Evie was very sweet. We were good friends. And my husband enjoyed Ito's company. And that man could cook. The meals we had over there. Everything made fresh. I thought Italians just ate pasta, but Ito made a lot of fish. It was always delicious.
Do you know where she is now? Is she still alive?
The woman nodded slowly. Evie lives in a nursing home, Kensington Manor. It's about 5 miles from here. The name sounds a lot nicer than it is. They always do, I guess.
Her family didn't help her out?
Teddy and Tony are the only ones still nearby, and they're useless. About 5 years ago, Evie went to the nursing home when she couldn't take care of herself anymore. I visited her there. It's not a nice place, but it's probably where I'm going to end up too, sooner rather than later. My kids are very good to me, but they have their own problems, and the nicer places cost way too much, far more than they could afford.
You could sell your house.
I don't own it. I did one of those reverse mortgages. I needed the money to pay the bills. As soon as I'm gone, they'll take the house.
Pine gazed around at the other homes. I guess a lot of people are in that situation.
The government tells you to spend your money to help the economy, create jobs, and then when you do spend pretty much all of it, they turn around and tell you to save money because you'll need it to retire on. So which is it?
I'm afraid I don't have the answer. I'm just sorry you have to be in this position.
At least I know I'll end up with a roof over my head and 3 meals a day. I'll just sit there in my own drool, she added bitterly. So much for the golden years.
You don't know it's that bad.
Most of my friends are in state-run nursing homes paid for by Medicaid and whatever dollars they have left. I visit them. It is that bad.
I'll take your word for it. Look, do you know if Ito is still alive?
I don't know that for sure. He just up and vanished one day. Long time ago.
Was it in the late 80s? Asked Pine sharply. That's when my sister was taken.
No, it wasn't that far back,
was her surprising reply. She mulled over this.
If I had to guess, it was sometime around 9/11 or
maybe the year after, but that's all I can remember.
What did Evie think had happened to him?
I don't know. Anytime I brought it up, she changed the subject.
So she doesn't know if he's dead or alive?
Not that she ever told me. But him disappearing like that, it left a hole in her heart as big as the Lincoln Tunnel. I could never understand it. Sometimes I think Bruno came back from the grave and killed him because that's just who Bruno was.
Pine thanked the woman and walked back to her car. She called Blum and asked her to take an Uber and meet Pine at the nursing home. Her old neighbor said 5 years ago Evie could no longer take care of herself. She might have deteriorated a lot since then.
Well, we can only try, replied Blum.
Story of my life, thought Pine as she walked to her car. Chapter 6. As Pine met Blum outside of the nursing home, she said,
There's one thing that has bugged the crap out of me.
What is that? Asked Blum.
How could Ito have possibly found out that my mother was a mole for the government? She never testified in court. Her identity was kept secret.
And we learned that before you and your sister moved to Andersonville, attempts were made on your lives while you were in WITSEC, said Blum, referring to the witness protection program run by the U.S. Marshals Service. So how did those people find out?
Do you think whoever was behind that might have leaked the information to Ito or his brother Bruno?
He was still alive at that time, albeit in prison.
It certainly could be that the two things are connected.
The nursing home looked like it had been built in the 60s, with lots of poured cement and now dated architecture. The roof line was flat, and they could see rusty rooftop AC units perched up there in a linear formation. They walked into the facility. The place had a musty odor, and the furnishings and wall coverings were old and frayed. Pine saw some elderly people moving slowly down the halls in either wheelchairs or walkers. Though old, the place looked relatively clean and uncluttered, but it certainly didn't seem cheery. Pine showed her creds and badge to the receptionist, and they were directed to a supervisor's office.
What is this about? Asked the woman, who was in her 30s and dressed in a white smock.
The remains of her lunch were sitting on her desk in an office that was small and messy.
We just want to ask Mrs. Vincenzo some questions in connection with an inquiry, Pine began.
Don't you need a search warrant or something? Said the woman, who had not identified herself, but whose name tag read Sally.
Not for just talking to someone voluntarily, Sally, replied Pine.
We're not searching anything, just asking questions. It's about Mrs. Vincenzo's husband.
I didn't even know she had a husband.
No one ever comes to visit except an old neighbor of hers.
She was the one who told me Mrs. Vincenzo was here, that she couldn't care for herself any longer.
Sally shook her head.
The poor folks forget to take medication, fall down, break a hip, try to drive, leave the cooktop on all night. It's the old story.
So can we talk to her?
I'm not sure how much good it will do. She's in our memory care unit.
Memory care unit?
She's been diagnosed with dementia.
I'm sorry to hear that.
But so long as we're here, can we at least give it a try?
It's important.
Well, I guess it can't hurt. It might be good for her to have some visitors, poor thing.
She led them down the hall to a set of double doors where a stenciled sign read, Memory Care Unit. Sally slid a card through a reader and the door clicked open. She led them to one room along the hall and knocked on the door. In a sing-song voice, she said,
Mrs. Vincenzo, Evie, you have visitors.
She opened the door and they entered the room. Evie Vincenzo was sitting up in bed and gazing placidly at them. She had on pink pajamas and there was a pink scarf over her curly hair. Many of the items in the room were also pink.
She likes pink, noted Sally. It soothes her.
I'm fond of pink myself, said Blum.
I'll check back in a bit, said Sally. Any issues, just hit that red button over the bed.
She left, and Pine and Blum drew closer to the woman. Pine sat in a chair, while Blum stood next to her. Vincenzo gazed up at Pine.
Do I know you, young lady? She asked in a pleasant voice.
No, but I know your neighbor. She likes to knit. She called you Evie.
Evie said nothing, and her eyes started to close. She lived in the house to the left of yours? Pine said helpfully. The woman opened her eyes, but again didn't respond. Blum said,
Do you enjoy visitors? I think I would. It's nice to talk to people.
I don't know you, do I?
Pine glanced at Blum.
No, but we wanted to visit you today.
My, I, not many visitors.
Your neighbor told us you were here.
Evie shook her head, clearly frustrated.
Old woman.
Pine drew closer.
Yes, I was talking to her about your husband.
My husband?
Yes, Ito? Do you remember him? She said he was a wonderful cook.
Evie looked down at her lap.
I used to cook.
She glanced at a wall.
They took my stove.
Blum reached over and put a gentle hand on the woman's shoulder. I like to cook too. I'm so sorry that you can't.
Evie, do you think you could answer some questions about it? Your husband?
My husband?
She said again.
I, no husband.
She shook her head.
I so miss cooking.
Yes, I'm sure you do. Now, you have a son named Teddy and a grandson named Anthony.
In response to this, Evie took off her scarf, showing that her hair was mostly gone. The clumps that were left were a tinted red. She scrunched the scarf up in her hands.
I would bake bread. Knead, knead, knead like this.
Pine sighed and glanced at Blum in resignation. She leaned in and whispered, Just keep talking to her. What are you going to do?
Just look around.
Agent Pine, the poor woman, I mean. Carol, I know. I feel for her, I really do. But if she has something in here that can help me find my sister, I have to look. I might not get another chance. I'll be quick and efficient. Blum refocused on Evie and asked her what kind of bread she liked to bake. Pine quickly searched through drawers and bent down to look under the bed. If Evie noticed this, she made no sign. She was still kneading her scarf. Pine next started riffling through the closet and finally spied a cardboard box behind a mound of clothes, stacks of People magazines, and a collapsed walker. The box was packed with papers. She pulled it out of the closet.
Mrs. Vincenzo, do you mind if I look through this?
She was now lightly tapping the scarf while Blum looked over and shrugged at Pine.
I don't think she can give informed consent, noted Blum. It's not like I'm going to use anything I find to put her in jail. But it might her husband.
Don't go all lawyer on me, Carol. This could be my only shot.
Pine sat down and went through the box, while Vincenzo had set the scarf aside and now stared happily at her pink lampshade, seemingly having forgotten that they were even there. There was so much in the box that Pine ended up giving Blum a stack to look through.
Old photos of her kids. Here's one of her and Ito, I think. Looks to be on their wedding day.
These photos have the names on the back. Here's Teddy, said Blum as she went through a stack. He looks to be a teenager. And this one is of Tony when he was a baby. Someone's written his name at the bottom. He looks so innocent. They all do at that age, of course, because they are. And then some of them grow up to be felons. Keeps us gainfully employed, said Blum.
Look, Pine said excitedly. Here's an article on Bruno Vincenzo's conviction. This is his picture.
She showed Blum the clipping with the photo of Bruno. Blum recoiled a bit at the image. He looks like he'd kill you over a piece of chewing gum. Pine scanned the article. It says he was convicted of murdering two people, one of them a witness for the prosecution. The trial was in New Jersey, which still had the death penalty back then. He got a death sentence, but then it was commuted to life after he agreed to cooperate.
And then he was later killed in prison, said Blum.
Right. He was in solitary at the prison,
but apparently somebody paid off a guard, and an inmate knifed Bruno. She pulled a folded, yellowed newspaper out of the box, and when she opened it, something fell out from between the folds. It was a piece of paper with writing on it. Pine started to read it, and her eyes widened as she did so.
"What?" asked Blum, trying to read over her shoulder.
"This is a letter from Bruno to Ito. From the date on it, he must have written it after he went to prison, but obviously before he was killed there."
"What does it say?"
"Bruno says he discovered a snitch, but didn't out the person to his mob bosses."
"Why not?"
"I don't know. He told his brother that the snitch had screwed him over somehow, and that's why he'd been arrested and was in prison now. He asked Ito to come see him."
"Maybe he didn't want to write down anything too sensitive. He wanted to tell his brother in person."
"Yeah, to tell him that it was my mom who screwed him over. But this letter still doesn't tell me how Bruno found out where we were living, because he had to know. That was the only way Ito would have known."
"I guess this confirms once and for all that he was the one to take Mercy."
"I can't think of another possibility. But what did he do with her?" She looked over at Evie Vincenzo, who was still staring in fascination at her lampshade. "And this poor woman isn't going to be able to answer that question.
But maybe her son can."
They finished searching the box, but found nothing else nearly as earth-shattering as the letter. Pine slipped it into her pocket along with a few other items, including photos of various family members. She rose and said to the woman in the bed, "Mrs. Vincenzo, thank you for seeing us."
"I so miss my stove."
She started kneading her scarf again. Blum watched Evie for a moment, her eyes glistening, and then she followed Pine out.
Chapter 7. It was much like every other prison that Pine had been in. Loud, reeking of foul odors, chaotic and at the same time rigid in organization, mainly because of the walls and bars. It was a sophisticated chess match between the imprisoned and the guards, but sometimes the guards shirked their duties in exchange for the profits associated with allowing access to drugs, girls, and other things that made whiling away years of one's life in a cage somewhat bearable. While Fort Dix's classification topped out at medium security, such was the state of the inmate population at federal facilities that men who would otherwise have deserved maximum security status had been relegated to institutions like Fort Dix. Maybe the authorities hoped that the prisons being on a military base would keep the inmates in line. That was wishful thinking, she believed. She and Puller cleared security together, reluctantly giving up their weapons. Then they were led to the visitor's room. "He won't give things up easily," noted Pine as they took their seats.
"Never assumed otherwise. The reverse, actually. He's apparently got a brain, at least my sources say. He'll want his pound of flesh for cooperating."
"What else can you tell me about him?"
"He's a bad guy through and through. Been in trouble since he was a teenager. Petty stuff to start, and then he rapidly graduated to more serious crimes. He's in here after being busted for heading up a burglary ring that was targeting senior citizens. One of them was nearly beaten to death when he showed up at his own house unexpectedly. Teddy's got a good lawyer, but he'll still be in here for another 8 years at least."
"Does he have a relationship with Tony?"
"From what we've found, Teddy would never qualify as Father of the Year. He wasn't around much. His mother did what she could with Tony before she called it quits and got the hell out of Dodge, but he nonetheless seems to have followed in his father's footsteps."
"Crime runs in the family. Teddy's uncle was a mobster."
"Right, the Bruno Vincenzo you mentioned before."
Pine nodded. "And now here comes the mobster's nephew." Two guards escorted Teddy Vincenzo to a seat at the table across from them. He was about 5'9", his frame hard and wiry. Corded muscles lined his forearms. He carried himself with as much confidence as anyone in leg irons could. At over 50, he had hair that was more gray than black and coarse in texture. From his expression, Pine could read the man clearly. He was curious, but guarded. He was looking for an advantage,
for anything to get him out of here at the earliest possible moment so he could get on with his criminal career.
They said FBI and CID,
began Vincenzo, and then he stopped right there, sat back and eyed them.
To what do I owe a visit from so many alphabet letters?
He had selected his opening move with a pawn, thought Pine. Nothing too dramatic. He was here for info, too. Puller said,
We're interested in your son, Tony.
Vincenzo said nothing to this, but he also didn't seem surprised by the statement. He looked at Pine.
And you?
I'm actually interested in your father, Ito. The inmate showed a glimmer of surprise at this request. He folded his arms over his chest.
Why?
I'd like to talk to him.
Same question.
He's a person of interest in a case I'm looking into.
You sure you ain't after the wrong Vincenzo, brother?
Bruno's dead.
That's right. He took a shiv in prison for being a snitch.
He looked over his shoulder, making his point.
Is that what you want from my future?
Are there any other Vincenzo brothers besides Ito and Bruno? Asked Pine. Because I couldn't find any.
No, that's it. Big Italian Catholic family. But the rest were girls. What case?
A kidnapping that Ito was involved in.
Bullshit. My old man ran an ice cream shop here in Trenton, about a half mile from our house on the strip, where they had all the mom and pop shops. It was called Vinny's Creamery.
Vinny as in... said Pine.
Just shortened from Vincenzo. What, you think Ito's creamery has a nice ring to it?
Okay. He smiled.
My old man was as pure as the driven snow, only sold vanilla.
Vincenzo showed white teeth as he smiled at his little joke.
Sound like a kidnapper to you? Circumstances can change people,
interjected Puller.
What, you mean like Tony? Like a lot of people. But yeah, like Tony. Your army, he's not. He works here at Fort Dix. That makes it my problem. Tony's a good boy. It's probably a misunderstanding.
He looked dead-eyed at them as he said this obvious falsehood.
You have any idea where he might be? I'm in here, he's out there. You're saying he's never come to visit you even though he works here? I don't remember saying anything like that.
How'd you come to inherit Ito's house? Asked Pine. Vincenzo's gaze swiveled back to her. He seemed to enjoy the back and forth between the two federal officers.
I was the oldest, and my siblings couldn't have cared less about it.
What about your mother? Said Pine.
What about her?
Said Vincenzo sharply. She's not doing very well. He shrugged.
My sisters put her in a place. I wasn't in a position to have a vote. I was locked in my own dump.
I've been to see her.
So, she's really not doing good?
She has dementia.
Lot of that going around, I hear. Got some of that in here. Older guys. They talk funny. Your siblings live around here?
Asked Puller.
Nowhere near. I don't think Jersey agreed with them. They got out quick as they could. Me? I like it just fine, only not so much in this place.
Pine had a sudden thought. Did your dad ever use the nursery rhyme, Eeny, meeny, miny, mo, with you and your siblings while you were growing up? Vincenzo grinned.
How the hell did you know that?
So he did?
Yeah, with six kids, he used it to pick one of us.
Pine licked her lips and tried to prevent her nerves from running away from her. Pick you for what? To reward? Vincenzo shrugged.
Sometimes, but other times to punish. When one of us did something wrong, and the others wouldn't rat him or her out.
Pine sat back, disappointed, and trying hard not to show it. Ito Vincenzo had used that nursery rhyme in deciding whether to take Pine or Mercy that night. She wanted to know if being picked in that manner was a good or bad thing. Vincenzo's response had obviously not helped. Puller glanced at her briefly and said,
Back to the house. Tony's living there. Okay? You knew that?
Asked Puller.
I know it now.
When's the last time you heard from your dad? Asked Pine. Vincenzo took a moment to scratch his cheek and then rub his nose, which gave him an opportunity to think things through, Pine knew.
I don't know. What's in it for me?
Finally, we're getting somewhere, she thought. Puller sat forward, taking charge.
Let's cut to the chase, Teddy. You help us, then you help yourself.
Vincenzo sat forward now, too. All business.
How much? And it has to be in writing. To my lawyer. I'm not taking no chances with you feds screwing me over. The time you got left here, we can make 8 years six. And you can also make 8 years four. I'm not getting any younger. Five. But it depends on what you can tell us. Bullshit gets you zip. Deal goes off the table and does not come back.
Pine could tell by the declarative way Puller said this that these negotiation parameters had been pre-approved in his chain of command.
Oh, tough guy, are we? I'm shitting my pants right now.
Vincenzo said this with a smile that again came nowhere close to his eyes.
I'm waiting,
said Puller.
What do you want to know? Where is Tony? And where is Ito?
Vincenzo glanced at Pine.
Why the hell do you give a shit about my old man?
Sometime in 1989, he was gone from home. For several months, maybe? Spring? Summer? Ring a bell?
That's a long time ago, lady. I get hung up on stuff from last week.
And 3 years off your time here is a damn good reason to try to remember. Vincenzo nodded, and his manner turned less flippant and more focused.
Okay, look, I want to help, but I'll need to give it some thought.
Only think in facts. I know enough that the bullshit Chief Puller mentioned applies fully to me as well.
Okay, your point is clearly made, lady. I'm not looking to extend my stay here any longer than I have to.
He talked to you about Bruno? She asked.
Sometimes. They were brothers. He was my uncle.
What did he say? I'm talking about what happened to Bruno when he went to prison the last time.
Well, one thing my old man told me stuck with me. He said his brother made a deal that never came through. Cost him his life.
He glanced sharply at Puller.
Which is the position I might find myself in. Snitches don't have long life expectancies in prison. You walk from this, I'm dead. We can throw in solitary if that'll make you feel better,
said Puller. Did Ito say he was going to do something because of what happened to his brother? Asked Pine. Vincenzo refocused on her, his expression calming.
Nothing specific that I can remember. He was pissed, that I know.
Your father was clean, not even a traffic ticket. Bruno was mob. Why would he care?
It was his own flesh and blood. That means something, or used to. Yeah, my old man knew what Bruno was, but Bruno went to prison, and he died when he shouldn't have. Somebody had to pay for that.
Ito told you that? Is that what you're saying? Asked Pine.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He didn't talk much about Bruno, so what he did say was memorable, at least to me.
And then your dad disappeared, we understand. Know anything about that?
Nope. I was actually a resident of another fine institution like this one at the time.
He looked at Puller now.
So what the hell has Tony done? Thought you'd know all about it. I would never encourage my son to break the law, and I'm sure he didn't. Are we expected to laugh?
Said Puller. Teddy shrugged.
Look, I'm an asshole, sure, but selling out my own kid? Come on. Under no circumstances,
said Puller.
You make the 5 years three in my own cell, and I get private workout privileges and no probation. I'm clean and free when I walk out of here, no checking in with nobody, no peeing in a cup for the next 5 years. Call it a family discount.
Pine looked at Puller, who nodded curtly. Vincenzo hunched forward and dropped his voice.
Okay, look, Tony is not complicated. He's a one-trick pony with not an original thought in his head. He does his little pill operation and he sells his shit and collects his share and he drinks his beer and bangs his women. But the situation he's in now is complicated. He's way in over his head. We're listening. I think he's got himself involved with some people he shouldn't be, and at some point they're going to figure out he's a liability and not an asset.
How do you know all this? Asked Pine.